The Upland Nomads podcast is brought to you by two guys that share a common passion, chasing birds and following our dogs through some of the most beautiful landscapes in the world, the uplands. Join us while we have in-depth conversations with others from all over the country that enjoy and share the same passions as us. Welcome to the Upland Nomads podcast.
Well, Trevor, you want to give us a little, tell us who you are and just tell us where you're coming from tonight?
Yeah, my name's Trevor Geiger. I'm from a little town called Medford, Wisconsin. It's about northern Wisconsin area. So,
yeah, we got a Wisconsin. No pack, no.
Yeah, not this year.
Yeah, well. Well, we never had it this year, so.
No.
But it was good to see Detroit make a playoff, I guess.
Right.
They can take they can take the paper bags off their head. Oh, northern Wisconsin, like north, like just straight north or northwest, northeast?
Yeah, we're about just probably about a. We're close to central Wisconsin there, but I mean, we're probably about an hour from the center part of the state.
Okay.
So, I don't know if you ever heard of a town of like Phillips, Wisconsin. That's more northern. That's about 45 minutes north of me. We're pretty much right in the heart of the Shawangunk National Forest. So.
Oh, sweet. So you're just hopping to skip out the door to go grill something.
Yeah. So I can basically just go 3 miles down the road and I'm on a public land, and there's about 1.5 million acres of the Shawangunk is, so there's a lot of cover or a lot of ground I can run just down the road from my place. So it works out really nice.
That works out pretty nice. I say I'm just as fortunate. I got to go about 3 miles out of town and I can get in some plots land and a couple of WMAs, but awesome. not a million acres.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the Shawangunk, it splits up a little bit, you know, but, I mean, it's pretty much, there's a lot of public land pretty much straight north of me all the way up to Minnesota, you know, so.
Yeah, right. Well, that's nice, you know, the long commute, or do you commute quite a bit on the weekends, trying different spots, or?
Well, usually, like, during the week, you know, after work, I'll just hunt some spots within an hour of my place, and then on the weekends, usually we got to go about an hour to get out of the pressure because by my house here, there's a lot of guys that they just hunt it and they hunt it and they hunt it. You know, every time you go there, there's a vehicle parked at every single logging road or trail. And we just tend to avoid all the high traffic zones. So usually on the weekends, we burn up farther north. So get out of all the pressure.
Yeah, you always go ahead.
I was just going to ask if it was like in-state pressure, out-of-state pressure.
Yeah, it's mainly just the locals around here. They hunt pretty hard. And then there's some guys that I've seen this year that are from Maine and then New Hampshire. And I mean, we do get a lot of out-of-staters, but it's not like every single weekend, you know, by any means. It's just pretty much there's a lot of locals that they kind of just pound the same spots over and over again, which you kind of got to just get out of that and and up farther north, so
the main people left Girls Cover to go to different Girls Cover.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought that was kind of silly, but
yeah, I mean the same with Minnesota guys.
Oops, sorry.
So I said Minnesota. Granted, Minnesota doesn't have many pheasants in North Dakota or South Dakota, but
right,
you see them all the time.
Yep, exactly. The blue platers, right?
that's what they call them.
Yep, I guess so.
We were never them, right, Wyatt?
I was for a while. Conver.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys that come up from Illinois too. I mean, there's usually guys that come up usually when the woodcock migrate through. There's some guys from Illinois that usually come up that you can. I always see them every year during the migration. There's Illinois plates, and that's usually when you see dog trailers and big dog boxes and everything like that. And the migration's running through, and the leaves are changing and falling, and all that jazz.
Sounds like Montana.
Yeah,
dog box. We pulled in a camp the first year we went to Montana, and where were we gonna stay? And we got all these dog boxes and guys with like built in like dog kennels in the back of their chassis, their like truck, in the truck bed.
Yep. That's how it is in the county that I live in. But if you go any farther north, it's usually, it kind of windles down a little bit. So, just like you said, you know, the chassis, dog boxes and everything like that. And yeah, it gets pretty, pounded pretty hard right by my house. So
with all those like acres and everything near where you live, are you always like coming across new spots or trying to find new spots, or just kind of have some that you know, like a handful, or actually probably way more than a handful, that you're like, well, I know these are probably good today, or so on and so forth?
Yeah, I guess I try not to hunt the same spots, you know, throughout the year. You know, I like to find new places and just kind of throw a dart on the map and just see what the cover looks like and just get lost in the woods, basically, because you got to find me, especially, you gotta get off the trails. And a lot of guys, all they do is they hunt the trails. You're not gonna put up as many birds just walking the trails when it gets later in the season. And so I'll just park on the side of the road and just start finding cuts. This year when we were finding cuts that were in 2011, was the sweet spot for grouse this year, by me anyway. So we found anything that would say if there was a cut that was back 40 deep, I'd walk to that cut, you know, walk through the open hardwoods to get to that cut. And there's little honey holes like that you can find on Onyx, you know, you just go in and hope for the best.
Does Onyx have like filters where you could see, I can't remember you can see like when cuts were made in certain areas or not?
Yep. Onyx has that. Yep. They have a layer. It tells you all the cuts, what year the cut was, and tells you, you know, what kind of a stand it is, you know. So that's a big help, because you can just by the road there, you know, you can go on Onyx and see, okay, this was cut in 2011. So you can say, so you got to walk up 100 yards to hit that cut. You know that it's going to be what year it was cut, and, you know, it's a lot easier to be able to not waste your energy and time just guessing. So Onyx is just a huge benefit to that.
Kind of like our recent imagery, and then like crop rotate, like past crops.
We
can use, because granted, it's not like it's going to show you what last year's crop was, but you can kind of guess with like other rotation or either where you're at that it's going to probably be where it's going to be wheat, stubble, corn.
Right, right.
Exactly. Or corn, alfalfa, canola. Especially canola, especially if you're looking for Huns, trying to find canola field.
Yep. So don't they switch out beans and then wheat out by you guys, right?
Yeah. I should know. I'm married to a farmer's daughter, but so are you, Michael.
So am I. No, it's usually, I feel like most people around this area, unless they're in like the valley and big into sugar beets, it's usually on like a three crop rotation. I don't know the exact order it is, but it usually goes like soybeans, wheat, and corn.
I
was saying, because my father's ma's in the beets, so sugar beets. So he's got four crops that he does.
Oh, really?
But I don't know how the rotation works, though.
So. I think it all depends on the soil and, you know, the chemistry behind it. Stuff like is way too smart for me.
Like if you went out west, like if you went out to western North Dakota, I think a lot of it's like no-till. So especially like in southwest, I don't really know about northwest. I haven't I think they still till there, but I know for sure it's Southwest that they no till, and it makes a difference though, especially like you can get into a cut sunflower field right along a fence line. Heck, you're probably gonna do pretty well.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that makes a difference just for food and cover. I think that's why like Minnesota, like I feel like Minnesota could have better numbers because my parents lived out in Southwest Minnesota and every field is a cornfield with a nice drainage just running through it, but then every field is tilled under. So I think that, I mean, I think North Dakota just holds them. I mean, because the same here, because we're right along the valley, so we have really good fertile soil. Everything gets tilled under, but I don't want to say too much because I don't even know what I'm talking about. So <I'm> get somebody chiming in and be like, yeah, you have no clue what you're talking about. Yeah, I know. That's why I don't do it.
Exactly.
Yeah, Trevor, do you want to give us a little bit of your hunting background? What got you? What and who got you started in the uplands?
Yeah, so my dad, before I was born, he had a Springer Spaniel, and he did quite a bit of grouse hunting, and the dog ended up passing away, and then we were born, and I was 15 years old, and I talked to dad and buying this German Shorthair, and talked him, begged him, said, I'll feed him, you know, I'll take care of him, this and that, and I'll train him. He's like, all right, well, if you can train him and feed him and take care of him, we'll get him. So I ended up getting the dog and basically didn't know what I was doing at 15 years old and basically just took the dog hunting and chased the dog around quite a bit because didn't really know any obedience. You know, he was just kind of a, you just put him on the ground and you just hope for the best and hope you didn't lose the dog kind of a thing. So then it was kind of a mess, you know, but we ended up, I had another friend that invited me out to South Dakota that year and I took the dog out there and he did really good. Everything clicked for him, you know, he put the puzzle together and he pointed some roosters and he harvested a few birds over them and that kind of sparked the journey, you know, to taking trips out of state and pretty much go on every chance I could. I'd hit the grouse woods after school and go home, grab the dog and go for a quick walk. And that's pretty much what started it all.
Nice. So do you still have that dog or?
No, we actually just put him down probably almost a year ago already now. Going on a year, we just put him down. So yeah, he was 10 years old, going on 11 when we put him down.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, he was definitely the dog that started it all, you know. And I'm beyond grateful for the dog. I mean, there's a lot of bad times in the beginning, kind of, you know, how short hairs are. They tend to be a little stubborn, and he had kind of a stubborn personality. So, but he's the one that introduced me to the whole thing, and I wouldn't have three dogs if it wasn't for him.
I got one that's stubborn and one that just kind of goes with the flow.
Yeah.
If I had more dogs like him, I'd probably have three short hairs, but I don't, so.
Yep. Yeah, my oldest that I have now is, he'll give you the middle finger once in a while. He's really cooperative and everything like that, but he tends to kind of push you off a little bit. You're quite stubborn, but
yeah, I say Riggs is pretty good out in the field, but when it comes when he's home is when he gets stubborn about stuff. It's like whatever. Yeah, Cashy probably pushes my limits in the field just because one, I'm not used to a dog that runs as much as he does, and but then when he comes home, he's just like the most relaxed dog I've ever
had. Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. He can sleep all day, pretty much every day, on his spot on the couch. And
yeah, they all have their own personality.
Yeah. And then Rix tries to antagonize him with a bone or something right in his face. So
so is Riggs the oldest one then?
Yeah, Riggs is the oldest. Cash is one.
So his first season was this year then?
No, it's his second season technically. First full season. He was 4 months old when they took him to Montana last season. Okay. So yeah, he'll be two in end of April, I think. Yeah, we took him to Montana. He did point one Sharpie out there, so that was about the extent of that.
Yep. Just short little puppy walks, I suppose.
Yeah, it was so hot, too, that it was warm, too. It was like 90s every day that we were there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, my dog is not a short hair, but she's definitely stubborn. I like to say she's smart, but she just has selective hearing and doesn't want to listen. She knows what I mean when I say something, but just refuses.
What breed Trevor, is that dog,
yeah. Oh, she's a Cocker Spaniel.
A Cocker? Oh.
Yeah, just a little one, but she gets the job done.
Yep, exactly.
So Trevor, you have three dogs. What do y'all got?
Yep, I have two short hairs, and then we got a setter pup. He's just over a year old. And then one short hair is five, and another one's eight.
What kind of a setter?
English setter.
Okay. I don't know if you said that. Yep. I might have not heard you.
No, sorry. No, I didn't. Yeah.
So you started with two short hairs.
Started with the one that we just put down. And then I ended up getting another short hair. And then I met my wife, my girlfriend at the time, and she had a short hair. So then I had two short hairs because she already had one. And we trained her short hair, and we kind of just fell in love with bird hunting and something we could do in common. And then a year ago, we added another one to the pack. Now it's a setter.
What made you decide to go setter out?
There's a local trainer around by me, and he knew this guy that had this litter on the ground. And I always liked the looks of the setter. I like the high tail, and I like, you know, they're your grouse. You know, when you see a magazine, that's what shows up on a grouse, you know, in a grouse magazine, is you're going to see a setter. So I kind of, they're always intrigued, but I just never pulled the trigger on one because I was always, I'm a short hair guy, you know, and this and that. And I talked to the trainer, and he said, hey, man, if you want to see a real bird finder, you know, these pups that are on the ground, they come out of really good stock. And he's like, I highly recommend getting one. So I kind of did some thinking. I did some talking to some other guys, and I said, you know what, I'm going to go meet with the pup's parents. Well, the pup's mom, and then my puppy's aunt. So he owns the aunt and the mom of my pup now. And we ran them in the woods there, and after watching them two dogs run, I said, yep, I'm taking a pup home. They were bird finders. It was crazy. It just blew me away watching them dogs cover ground in the grouse woods, and they'd stack up on a bird at 200 yards in the grouse woods, and every single time you'd walk up to them, there's a bird there every time.
I know, like, listen to some people talk about grouse woods. I know some people like their dogs close, some or not so close.
Everybody has their own opinions on it, I guess. Everybody has their own opinions on it, but I mean, if you got a good bird dog and if he can hold point, I don't let him go farther than 200 yards just because of wolves. Wolves are kind of a big thing for me. So if he's over 200, it's not, you know, that's not okay. But I run bells on my dog so I get the instant replay. But I let him go up to 200, but anything farther than that, you know, he knows to stay within 200. But I mean, No. If the short hairs run about 100 yards tops in the grouse woods. Usually 70 to 100. I mean, they stay like really close. I mean, with a setter, he runs big, but he comes and checks in, you know, quite a bit. And,
so how does that translate when you get out to the prairie?
So my short hairs, they'll stretch out when they get on the prairie because they can see you, you know. So they'll run. Right. I mean, they'll stretch 200-250 yards the short hairs will. And sometimes they'll go up to 300 yards, but they stretch out a lot more when you get on the prairie. But the setter, he gets out there ways. Which is fine, you know. I was
right. Sometimes.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
No, say sometimes. Well, with GPS, it's nice, but.
Yeah. I mean, if we're hunting pheasants, I don't allow them to, you know, I won't allow them to range that much when we're hunting pheasants, but.
Yeah, I try to keep it around 100 yards when we're hunting pheasants. It depends, I guess, depends on what kind of cover we're in, I guess. If we're in cattails, yep. It's probably 100. But if we're in like CRP, I don't really care how far they run.
Yeah, I tend to stay away from cattails.
Yeah, it's pretty unavoidable when we hunt December and January.
Yeah, exactly. Well, when we go out there, you know, it's, you know, we primarily hunt for the sharp tails and hunts, and then pheasants are just kind of bycatch.
Right. Yeah, that was a nice thing. I went to Wyoming. I mean, not that I don't get to see my dog's range, but in Wyoming, there's like just you're like walking down like a ridge, and you can see your dogs run for a long time. It's like, oh, 300 plus yards away.
Yeah, just a little speck on the other side of the ridge.
Pretty much.
Yeah, it's beautiful to watch a dog work in the kind of country.
Right. I was just hoping they hold. But it's not like a pheasant, yep. So most of the time it does. With a pheasant, yep. I'd be like, yeah, there's no shot, so I'm getting there in time.
Exactly. Well, track runners.
Runners or track stars.
Do you ever run into any problems with that setter getting burrs all over?
Yep. Yeah, in North Dakota.
Oh, go ahead.
They say if you use, so that we have horses and you can use cowboy magic, kind of rub it into their tail and their ears and then comb them out. But I mean, no matter what, you're going to spend them quite a bit of time pulling burrs every time you're done hunting. And around by me in the woods, I mean, it ain't too bad, but when we were out on the prairie in North Dakota this year, I spent an hour every night after a hunt combing them out. It was bad. But we try to trim them. I usually trim them up before, like, if, depending on the weather, we'll trim them up, shave them, and then we'll trim up his ears, you know, with the scissors and trim up his tail.
Yeah, I'm going to have to try that because I definitely haven't found a good technique. There's times where I'm picking burrs off of my dog when she gets a little thicker with the fur, and I think I get them all, but then 2 weeks later, I'm petting her or rubbing her belly, and I find one, and I'm like, oh, what the heck? I thought I got them all.
Yep. Yeah, I know, right on his tail, you'll think you get them all, or on his ears, and then same thing. You know, you're petting them the next day or a couple days later. It's like, oh, there's some more in here.
It's one nice thing about those short hairs.
Yep. Yeah, I know, and we're after the first day, I'm like, I'm going to pick my cover wisely, which dog I'm going to put on the ground, because I'll run the short hairs when I see all the cockle burrs. I'm like, yep, I'll throw the short hair down.
Yeah, North Dakota. I guess I never pay attention to what I'm even running half the time because I don't have to worry about it.
Right. I never did either.
But if I do end up getting a setter, I guess I'm sure if you probably do, you're probably like, yeah, I probably should not run my dog in this cover. Like, I don't really want to be picking burrs for an hour at night.
Yeah, it's all worth it, though, because I don't think I'll ever buy another short hair after having a setter. I just love the style and the intensity that he, when he's on point, stacked up, it's just, I don't know. It just looks different, and I like the way he hunts and how he handles, and they're just super, super great dogs.
That's good to hear. Actually, I'm interested in getting one, not anytime soon, but that's my next dog.
Yeah, I definitely talked
to.
Oops, sorry.
I've talked to a few breeders, just like how many times, just wondering, like, just basic information, like how many times yearly, like they have a litter of puppies, and like how long is the wait list and whatnot.
Right.
I need a bigger house. So.
Yeah. you need a bigger house for three of them.
Yeah, I mean, a bigger yard, bigger house.
Yeah, my setter is about 43 pounds, I'd say. So he's on the smaller end, but.
Male or female?
Yeah, male, yep. Yep, yeah.
You have all males then?
Yeah, they're all three males. Are. Yep.
What are your short hairs weigh then?
The oldest one is about 65 to 68 in the off season. He gets down to about 65. And then the younger short hair, he's 80 pounds. So he's big, but he has joint issues and all that. And when he was a puppy, he grew too fast. He was fully grown at 6 months, and now all of his joints and everything's all catching up to him, and he can't hunt, you know. I mean, you can't run him all day long for 4 days, you know, which I don't think he can, any dog. But, I mean, he gets real stiff, and I attribute that to his size.
I'd say mine are like 65 and 60. Rick's is probably about 58 to 60, like during hunting season, probably about 63 now. But,
yeah, about-
yeah I mean – they're not running as much every day, or not much at all each day. They're couch potatoes kind of now.
Yep. That's how my dogs are right now. They're pretty much couch potatoes.
Right.
We have to run them. We run them every night. Go on the four-wheeler, just kind of burn their energy off a little bit.
Yeah, it's amazing how much just a little bit of like a little bit of ranger ride or. Let them run out in front of you, how much of energy they burn.
Oh, yeah.
And they're good.
Yeah, we usually take them to the backfield and run them back and forth a couple times, and they go back inside and they go to sleep.
Right. So, from Wisconsin, most of your... Oh, go ahead, Michael.
I think we're going to ask the same exact question. So, go ahead.
So you're from Wisconsin. What are you mainly what birds are you after in a season?
Rough grouse and woodcock.
No pheasants?
No, there. By me, there's no wild pheasants or nothing like that. And I don't even think there's any release birds around where I'm at. You have to go over by Eau Claire. New Richmond area, they release birds over that way, but I don't hunt them at all. It's pretty much hunt grouse and wood.
Which of those two would you say is your favorite to hunt? You most targeted
out of the rough grouse and woodcock?
Yep.
I would have to say rough grouse. The season's longer on the rough grouse than the woodcock. Woodcock opens up later and then it closes earlier. But when the migration is going through, I'll chase woodcock. You know, when the migration's at its peak, I'm running woodcock. And if you get a grouse, you get a grouse. But other than that, I primarily focus on grouse, which the cover sometimes overlaps, where you'll find grouse, woodcock in the same general area. You know.
Can't beat that. It's like getting sharpies and huns. Pheasants and huns, maybe a sharpie in the same spot.
Right. Yeah, we pretty much, like when we'll go out, well, like besides the migration, I mean, we're pretty much targeting grouse, you know. but you'll find woodcock, especially when they're migrating through. You can, it's fun. It's something to see when they're migrating through.
Sweet. So getting on to going places to hunt. Have you ever, do you just hunt like your grouse opener? Do you ever go out west for a sharptail opener? Or do you just stick around home?
No, I haven't. I haven't yet, no. I've thought about it, but the heat, just for me to drive all the way out to Montana and then only be able to hunt a few days, you know, it just doesn't justify for me. So we basically just wait till grouse opens in Wisconsin here, and we run on grouse, and then it'll translate later in the season. We'll head out to North Dakota, and we should do a trip out there every year.
How does early season, like, grouse cover, is that tougher or sometimes even harder to run on?
Yeah.
To even get birds?
It's definitely a challenge. We run a lot of, when it's like, when it opens up right away, we're pretty much just running logging roads and letting the dogs run in the woods. But you pretty much, dog goes on point, you go to flush it, you hear it, and you catch a glimpse of it, and that's about it, really. With all the leaves up, it's definitely a challenge, but you can still get lucky and harvest some birds, but it's basically just putting the dogs on the ground and getting them bird contacts, and you try to stick to the logging roads just because it's just too miserable to walk when the leaves are all the way up to actually beat the brush and get the cover.
So, like, October is probably your best month, then, I suppose, for
middle to late October is about perfect. That's my – October is about my favorite month. Usually early October, the leaves are fruity pebbles, you know. That's a good time to be out in the woods, too, because it's just gorgeous to see all the colors and everything like that. But my favorite time, you know, is about when as soon as them leaves drop, it's go time.
Yeah. This year, you probably had a pretty long grouse season, I imagine, with the weather we had. And you guys probably had the same, if not better, weather than we did.
Yeah, it was first year I can ever remember hunting until the last day of the season, because there wasn't no snow at all. We had some snow, but it melted off, and I think we only had 5 inches or so at one point, but it melted pretty much right away. So we were able to hunt all the way to the last day.
That's nice. We hunted all the way to the last day this year. Pheasant season last year was, I think I had to call it quits in North Dakota before Christmas, because we had 3 feet of snow, 4 feet of snow, maybe. Wow. I remember I went out like a couple days before Christmas, and I shot 3 roosters, luckily within like 100 yards of the truck, and I almost felt bad doing it.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to get up to fly either, and I was like, this is not worth it. It's not worth it for them. It's not worth it for me. Plus, it was like way too cold to be out.
Yep.
But this year we got a little bit of snow, but then it all melted off, and we had like 2 weeks in the 40s. So
you didn't have a lot of snow stuck around very long then.
So, and I think out west, I don't think they've gotten anything. So
they got up northwest. They could get quite a bit of snow in like one storm.
Yeah, but because when I first went, they had just got that. They got the 12 to 15 inches. That was when we got that little bit too right away. Like was it end of October? I think. Yeah, it was. It was last week in October, because I went out deer hunting, week of deer hunting in North Dakota, and I have pictures of my truck, and it's just my truck's maroon, and it was identified as tan at the end of the trip.
Oh, really?
And then, but it was cold enough at night. Cold enough at night, they were they didn't have any like the windshield wiper fluid and stuff to, or like to wipe your windshield. So I was like scraping mud off the my taillights every day. Or, yeah, it was. It took me three car washes, two car washes, like touchless ones, and then I was like, my truck is still not clean. So I took it to the self-serve and power washed my, yeah, everything was just, I think I still have mud up in my, on my step-ups, my freaking side of my truck. There's still mud caked to the inside of it. It's like, you know, but
I mean, I think,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, we actually left the, when I was out in North Dakota this year in October, I left and that next day on a ride home, that's when we were out in Northwest North Dakota, they got a big pile of 10 inches of snow or so. So we had to hike back in the snowstorm.
Ooh, that's no fun.
We went out in a blizzard this year, so.
Yeah, I wish I would have stayed another day and hunted the pheasants in the first snowfall, but it would have been, usually that's the best time to hunt pheasants is the first snowfall.
Michael and I did, and we're on, because we got it the next day, too. We went out just around here on the east side, and we had a quick morning, which is not heard of around here, because we're up in northeast. We went up northeast.
So do you have good hunt numbers or sharp tails by in the north part of the northeast part of, or is it kind of,
I mean, north of where I'm at, you can hunt sharpies just because protected for prairie chicken, but south of, it's literally like highway 2 that runs north of Grand Forks, so you can't hunt anything north of that for a ways, but yeah, they're just pretty good. There's been pretty good numbers around. Huns have been, I don't know, I didn't have as good a year at Huns this year. I sort of saw a lot. I just didn't have like the shot. I still got into some, but I not as many as I did last year. And it was just more so like I was talking with somebody else and like, hey, the Huns got up on the other side of the tree line or something like that, and I didn't get a poke at them, or hey, I forgot to load my gun. Or I was being picky about dog work here. That's it. But yeah, we, I don't know, Michael had an opening weekend, we had Cash stuck a really nice point on the end of a tree rope, but I just think they got out too wild on Michael's side. They just flushed wild. I think they're too far away. Nobody got any. There's plenty of times you could have just could have gotten them off the side of the road, but I don't know about that.
So. Yeah. No sport in that for me anyway.
No. No, no, if I can't watch my dog work, it's not too fun.
Nope, not at all.
But I mean, even while like just driving around, I feel like I have seen a lot more hunts in this area than I did when I was like in college and hunting that same area 4 years ago.
Okay.
It's still one of those birds I'm still figuring out. I was like, I've gotten into a fair amount and I've hunted them quite a bit, but it's like, yeah, I can say like we could hunt this and there might be some there, but I was like, God dang, I'm still not for certain, you know. Like, my best judgment is if I see them on the side of the road in the morning and I watch them go out there and it's like, okay, or I've hunted areas before and it's like, okay, there's been hunts here before, so there's a good chance there's probably more here, so.
Right. Yeah, I know when we hunt them, usually when we went out the first year out there and we were hunting Huns and we got butts kicked the first 2 days, and the first probably we found, we're like, well, was this just a coincidence or is there an actual reason why they're here? You know, we had to put the whole puzzle together and figure out, okay, like this is what we need to look for. We need A, B, and C. And then once we found all three things, objectives, it really benefited. I mean, we wouldn't find them unless we were right on the wheat. They had to have bushes. They had to have, you know, I just had to have all this stuff just perfectly aligned. We don't have a lot of experience either, but we kind of found a pattern that worked for us, and we moved some birds, but.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those birds I don't ever go out and just, like, I'm either going to hunt pheasants or I'm going to hunt sharpies, and it's, like, if I get a bonus one, like bonus hunts, it's a great day.
Yep. Yep.
But there was quite a few times this year that we were done hunting pheasants before noon, so we were trying to go hunt hens. So,
yep.
And then they're just one of those birds.
They're definitely one of my favorite birds. I'll figure out one day.
Though. Oh yeah,
they're the covey rut. Just awesome.
Yeah, getting into covey birds, as I say, you and your wife had a big trip this year.
Yeah. It was definitely a trip that I'll never forget. It was just gorgeous country and new places and new birds, and it was just when you're hunting the quail. I mean, that was awesome. That was quite the experience.
Was that valley quail or mount quail?
Valley quail. Yep. Valley quail. Yep.
No chucker? Yep.
We hunted for chucker, but we were unsuccessful. We only had, since we had a 24-hour drive, we had to kind of figure out how many days we can actually spend hunting and how many days it's going to take with driving. And, you know, we took a week and a half to do the trip, so we had 4 days to hunt. And the first day we kind of just drove around quite a bit trying to find spots to hunt chucker, and I was in contact with a guy that lives in Nevada, Ryan Newmarker, and he helped me out quite a bit, kind of pointed me in the right direction and kind of told me what to look for and, you know, what kind of country is good. And so we basically drove around the first day, and then we put the dogs in the ground a couple times for chucker that day. And we didn't have any luck. And then the second day we hunted quail a little bit. And then we did try for chucker again, but it's definitely hard to just go out there and just throw a dart on the map, you know, because coming from a Wisconsin boy that has nothing but trees around you and you're walking in these big vast country, you know, it's just, it was a challenge, you know. But the quail were a lot easier to target.
Us flatlanders would have a tough time out there.
Yeah, when we were walking up the hills, you know, that's what they call them out there. They're just rolling hills, but you're side hilling up them, and you're basically looking at the hill even with your face and your toes, you know, it's just wild. And then we get to the top and we're like, all right, perfect. We can walk the tops and, you know, let the dogs run the ridges. But where you're at is really, really steep country. And you get to the top and you'd have to go straight back down and then straight back up. It was never where you could walk the ridge and let the dogs, you know, cover the sides.
I would say, we went out to the Black Hills turkey hunting a few years back when I was a lot more in shape than I am now. And it was so bad. I was like, holy shit, what did I get myself into? And I was like, yeah, the truck should be right over this hill. So we took this steep hill all the way up and then went, and I was like, oh, fuck, the truck's not there. We gotta go over this next hill. Son of a gun. Sucking wind.
Just walking down the dang things and going up them,
right? And then you can't hardly go straight up too. Nope. So you gotta kind of set.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. And then everything out there was all, you know, when you're walking, it's all loose rock and stuff. So it's definitely, you need a good pair of boots and you need to be able to walk, you know, sideways down them. You have to kind of side hill them.
Any cactus out there?
What's that?
Any cactus out there?
Not where we were at. I mean, not for when we were hunting trucker, no. Just a lot of rocks.
That was the worst part about being the Black Hills. I fell one time and I fell right on my ass on a freaking little cactus. Yeah. Sitkas didn't help me then.
No.
Yeah, it's something I'd like to do someday, but god dang, I don't know if I think I need a freaking one of the football players get on the sidelines after D tackle runs a touchdown back. Hook me up in an oxygen tank here.
I highly recommend it. I really do. It's just something else. It's gorgeous country, and watching a dog run on the other side of the canyon, you know, it's beautiful.
How's the cover like terrain when you're hunting the valley quail compared to
the chucker?
Where
we hunted the quail primarily, we went in the more south in the state, and it's more, there's a lot more flatter spots. It's more flatter country. I mean, there is mountains, you know, and hills around it, but where we found a lot of luck, it wasn't bad. You know, it wasn't super steep or nothing like that. It was pretty much flat where we were kind of at for the quail. But I mean, when you were where we actually stayed, there was a covey of probably 50 quail right by our house, and that was right in the valley of the hills, you know. And I mean, you can find them in steeper country too, but we didn't target them in that because we only had so many days to hunt and we didn't want to burn our dogs up, and we had better luck for the quail more in the flatter parts, and there's more egg. So we kind of found egg in the flatter parts, and then you'd find like drainages and trees, like little tree lines with a creek running through it. And if you had any kind of agriculture around it, I mean, it wasn't hard to find quail in that. That and sagebrush, a lot of sage.
Kick up any other birds when you're out in that, like, country?
No, just valley quail.
Because I know isn't there the huns in there too?
I lied. Yeah, we actually found some pheasants one day, by accident. We were for quail. There was a couple pheasants.
Went all the way out to Idaho to get some pheasants.
Yeah, we definitely weren't hunting for them, but we were targeting quail. We actually, the last day, we kind of put the puzzle together after getting our butts kicked quite a bit, and we ended up finding, I think it was about 10 or 11 coveys of quail the last day. I mean, it was good. I mean, once we found what we were looking for, it was a riot.
I bet. How do they hold? Are they runners, or do they hold pretty good?
If you're in the sagebrush, they run like crazy. But once you can get them if you find them in like trees, you know, if they're by the creek, by the trees, they hold super, super, super tight. But once they're out, if they're out in the sagebrush, I mean, they run like crazy. But if you can get them in decent cover, I mean, they hold great, good dog work. And when the covey explodes, they're right by your feet, you know, and some of them will step behind you, have a few stragglers, and yeah, they're definitely.
So do you go pick out the singles then after a covey breaks up?
We did not. We didn't. No. When the covey would rise, you know, you'd try to take a bird out of that, but being from not shooting covey birds a lot, you'd shoot, you know, I shoot a double gun, shoot twice, and then there you are reloading, and five more get up right by your feet, and there you stand with an empty gun. But no, we didn't really hunt. We just kind of moved on, went to a different cup. I mean, we just kept pushing through. what we planned on doing. We didn't, because I mean they'd fly quite a ways, and then they'd sit. Well, then if they'd sit in the sagebrush, that's like trying to find a needle in a haystack.
Yeah,
because they'll run through all that sagebrush, and they're notorious of running away. That's for sure.
So, do you guys? You said mentioned a house. Do you guys Airbnb it then, or?
Yeah, we ended up getting an Airbnb. We actually rented a Airbnb right up in the mountains.
That's pretty sweet.
They had a whole house ourselves, so it was really, really neat.
Yeah, I suppose you can't go. So we can't go on a honeymoon and go out and just camping in the backcountry, huh?
No, I don't think the wife would have allowed that.
I don't think I'd really.
We got that house, but yeah, actually, when we rented the Airbnb and online went to order, and right in the thing it says, bring snow chains just in case you get snow or whatever. And we ended up getting snow one of the days, and to get up by our house there's about six houses up in the mountain there, and about a single track road that's straight up and down. And yeah, you wouldn't want a lot of snow if you didn't have snow chains to get up there.
You're like, snow chains. Yeah, I've seen snow. I don't need that.
Yeah, right. Yep, nope. I highly recommend them. Because there ain't no guardrails along the side of it either, and it's a straight drop off the side.
Yeah, I'd be like, yep, I'm just walking up, walk back down tomorrow.
Yeah, we were, that one night we got a whole bunch of snow. It was like the last day when we were actually leaving the next day, and there was a whole pile of snow. Luckily, we only had to go down. We didn't have to go back up it, but yeah, definitely would have not been fun.
I'd imagine.
Yeah,
so what did you say?
Oops, sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, driving through the mountains was gorgeous and everything, but I was pretty glad to get on flat land after I got out of there.
Yeah, back to the roots.
Yep, that's yep.
You can drive 80 miles an hour and get somewhere and not have to drive 50 miles an hour around this to go. What, you can drive like, feel like you drive 7-10 miles, but you've only gone like a mile. You've gone around the hill.
Yep. Around the hill, over the hill, and then back down in the valley, and then around the hill. And yep.
Yeah.
Yep. It took about an hour to get out of the mountains from where we were at. So, and it wasn't very far. It just was because there wasn't many miles or nothing like that. It was just how you had to drive. You had to go slow, and then you go fast, and you go slow.
That was kind of how it was in Wyoming. Not that the road was terrible, but it was still gravel back for like 15 miles back to the campsite right at the base of the hills, mountains. But it took forever, it felt like, to get, because you couldn't drive super fast. And
nope.
Once you get, nope. There's no cell service.
Nope. Yeah, there is no service at all as soon as you got out there.
That's nice, so.
Yep. It's nice kind of just to detach away from your phone.
Right. So you kind of touched on a little bit of what you might want to bring if you're going all west, some tire chains.
Yep.
Uh-huh. What was your best, worst thing that you brought along on these trips?
The best thing I would have to say is a lot of water. First aid kit, a Garmin, you know, if you got stranded or broken ankle on the mountain, you can at least use your Garmin to, because otherwise there's no service. I mean, you're basically, if you break an ankle, you're kind of left out there if you don't have no way to contact no one because there's no service anywhere. The worst thing, I honestly don't think there was anything that you're like, oh, I should have never brought this. You know what I mean? I was preparing myself a lot for every trip I go on. I bring every little thing. Like, yeah, if I don't use it, I don't use it. As long as I have the room, it's fine, because I'd hate to get out there and like, oh, crap, I wish I would have brought this. So I guess I wouldn't say I had any things that were bad to bring along by any means.
It's always nice to be an overpacker.
Yep. And that's, my wife actually does half the packing, because I'll sit there and like, hey, I'll rattle off everything. She's like, nope, you forgot this, you forgot that, you forgot this. I'm like, oh, crap.
So I always bring way too many clothes than I need to, or like, I always feel like I bring way too many clothes, but it's like, well, if I like take for instance, this year we went out and we hunted in a blizzard and everything was just soaking wet. Like thank goodness I had an extra pair of like brush pants and extra pair of long johns, extra socks.
Yep. You hate to sit, even when you're done hunting, then you sit in the truck when you're soaking wet. That ain't no fun either. So it's nice to change out your clothes, just be dry.
Right.
Definitely extra pairs of socks are nice to keep in the truck.
Like merino wool socks, too.
Yep. That's pretty much what I wear exclusively now.
Honestly, I've switched over. Bought some merino wool like base layers. So I just ran like Under Armour like base layers. Man, it is a game changer.
Definitely wicks the moisture a lot.
A lot better than Under Armour does.
Yep.
And it's not as tight.
Nope.
That was nice.
It's also nice to have socks, because you'll an extra pair of socks, because you never know when you need to use them. You might need to lose a couple socks. When you forget your dude wipes. Right? That's what they're called? Yep. Dude wipes?
Hey, I got dude wipes in the truck now. I was eating Cheetos. I was eating Cheetos at lunch, and I got out there and I was like, son of a bitch. I don't have anything to wipe this Cheeto dust off. After I was like halfway done with my bag. And I was like, oh, fuck yeah, I forgot I got dude wipes in the back now. For this ice fishing, I never went. Yeah, too bad I didn't have those opening weekend, huh, Michael?
Yeah, no, that kind of sucked.
Yeah, you tell North Dakota to open up their missile site bathroom bases then.
Yeah, I know. That thing wasn't locked a couple of years ago, but it was this time.
They're like, God dang. They probably locked it after you've been there that one time. They're like, holy shit.
Make sure this guy doesn't come back.
We'll lock them all up.
All right. I kind of asked you about a favorite species here, like in Wisconsin, but overall, over everything that you have, you know, chased or possibly want to chase, what's like your favorite upland species?
Oof, that's a tough one. I'd probably have to go. I think I'd still, my heart set to Huns. I really love that bird. As much as the quail was awesome, don't get me wrong. The quail was definitely fun, but I still love them, Hungarian partridge.
Yeah, they are fun birds. When, like, I'm same with Wyatt, like, I usually don't target them, but when you stumble upon them, they are fun birds. Yeah, and they're pretty.
That's for sure. Oh yeah, they're gorgeous. But if I were to pick my favorite to eat, it would be a sharp tail. Some are my favorite. I love eating sharp tail.
Oh really? I'd have to go rough grouse.
I guess, yeah, if you put rough grouse in there, I'd probably pick rough grouse over sharp tail, but sharp tail, if I, like, anywhere out west, them are delicious.
I want to hear how you cooked it the first time. How was it the first time you had sharp tail?
I definitely looked it up, because, and I heard on podcasts that you definitely can't overcook them, so I kind of cooked them like a steak. Fast and hot.
Yeah. A little salt, pepper, garlic, and
Yep. I actually bought some stuff from Walton. It's called roasted ring neck, and that's what I used. And that was really, really good. Just kind of sprinkled it on there and throw it in a pan and sear it on both sides, and it was awesome.
So we've done that, and then we've done, like, thrown in, like, an Alfredo, basically like a steak Alfredo, kind of. Yeah. I try to get it so my wife will eat some, because if she knows what we're actually eating, she won't eat it.
Oh.
It's pheasant, it's fine. It tastes like chicken, but
yeah.
Anything else, it's trying to sneak it into a different...
Oh, you're eating a chicken salad tonight.
Yeah. Steak salad.
And my wife loves when I throw it into like a stir fry. Kind of fry it up real quick and then slice it thin. Almost like little, steak strips, I guess you'd call it. You could buy it at the grocery store type thing. But then, yeah, just with the grouse, pheasant, anything, you cut it thin and throw it in the stir fry. It's pretty good.
But I like making quesadillas or like a fajita too. Them are good.
Yeah. So I just made some jerky. It actually turned out pretty good. Yeah. There's some pheasant and sharp-tailed breasts that they're frozen, and I took them to the meat slicer and sliced them. Thought were thin enough, but they weren't. Some of them were thin enough. Some were could be a little thinner, but 3 hours on the smoker, it was like 11 o'clock at night. I didn't want to sit out there any longer. And then I just kind of threw stuff together, and I was like, kind of go for a sweet and hot, and then it ended up being more hot than sweet, but it worked for me, but the wife didn't like it.
No.
But then you just I had people over this past weekend, and I offered some jerky, and I didn't have any jerky left by the time it was done. But every time everybody was gone, so I was like, well, it must have been decent enough, or everybody was hungry enough.
Right.
That's a good way to use up some birds too, and to have a good snack. Actually, it doesn't like take it doesn't take up a whole bunch of prep time, really. It takes a little bit of prep to slice them, but then throw them in a marinade and then stick them on the smoker. I mean, it doesn't take a whole lot.
Oh, yeah, I never messed around with it actually yet.
No, I never did either, but I've done a little bit more this year because I've had way more birds than I'm trying to, like, try different things. I've done sausage this year. I've done jerky. I'm trying to do different things, make my meal like go further, I guess.
Yep. Yeah, we do that with venison, you know. We made a bunch of breakfast sausage this year and made some brats and stuff like that, so... I definitely like to try some snack sticks with pheasant or grouse or something like that too, but I don't really want to waste a good buying grouse on snack sticks though.
My buddy Joe, who I buy my dog food through, he made bacon, and it was really good. He brought it to pheasant camp, and it was really good. He made breakfast every morning. He could make that. Honestly, I'd take that bacon any day of the week. I just need to know. I just don't have a meat mixer. That's what I need to. I don't think I can do that by hand enough to get it like whipped.
Because we actually did it. We ran it through the mixer, then mixed the pork, then mixed the venison, and then we seasoned everything. We added water to it to kind of moisten it up a little bit, mix all things through. And then we ran it back through the grinder again with the seasoning already mixed in. And that helped out a lot because the seasoning wasn't patchy. You know, you bite into it, every taste was, you know, throughout it had seasoning. But I think mixing it with the seasoning also helped as well.
That was bacon?
Nope, that was just breakfast sausage.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I heard of sometimes, like I've seen on like Tyler Webster's one, they just ran it through once, but no, I've seen sometimes they've gone through twice.
Yeah, we did it twice just because that was the first time we ever made it, and we're like, well, I might as well just do it twice. But it turned out good, so.
I just made like breakfast. I just made sausage. I didn't season any of it because I just put it in the tubes, and I was like, well, we can either season it with whatever we want to when we make it. So,
yep, exactly.
So
now we don't get burnt on the same flavor.
Right. I mean, it was just, yeah, I was like, if we want to take out a little, make some breakfast patties and season it with some, like, I think Traeger has a breakfast rub. Like, then you just season everything with nothing. And what, I mean, seasoned salt and pepper do go a long way too. Yep, I'm always throwing Cajun seasoning on everything anyway. So,
yep.
getting in, I'm told we're up here an hour now. I suppose we should get into. Michael kind of hit on your favorite species to hunt. We got a few questions here. Trevor, what's your favorite bird dog? But it can't be your own.
I'd have to go with an English. Wait, what?
Favorite species of dog, but it can't be your own.
Oh, English Pointer.
English Pointer. You ever hunted with one?
Yeah, one. Just one of them, but when I was at, I met up with Travis Frank and George Lyle and them at a training seminar at Sunny Peacars over in Gilman, Wisconsin, and they have a lot of pointers, and they're definitely some nice looking dogs.
Well, yeah, I suppose George runs all pointers, isn't he? Yeah, it's Cocker, I guess.
Yep. Yeah, and then Ben Brennigan had his pointer there too, and Amos, and that was a nice looking dog. And I like dogs' tails.
He's got a setter now too.
Yeah, I saw that. That setter that he got has the same dad as my setter.
Nice.
Kind of funny.
All right, I'll get into the next question. So it's kind of a two-part question, so I'll ask the first one here. What gun are you currently carrying with you in the field?
I got a CZ Sharptail 28-gauge.
28-gauge. Look at that, huh? Gaining popularity. I like it. Yeah, I shoot a 28-gauge.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
What do you shoot then?
I shoot a... It was off a used rack and Shields, and I saw it and I had to have it. It's a Mossberg SA-28.
Okay.
And I didn't even bring my 12 gauge out at all this year.
No.
No.
Yeah, I have a 12 gauge and a 20, but grouse hunting, I love that little 28 and so light. And when we went out west carrying just a super light shotgun. Like swinging a broomstick. I love that thing.
Yeah, they're definitely nice.
I'm gonna trade my 12 gauge in for a 28 side by side. But yeah, but then I almost threw my brothers away when I were out west this last time, and I was like, I cannot figure out this two trigger system because I'm my over under. It's just one trigger.
Yeah,
I was like, I cannot figure this out. And it could have just been the gloves and being cold. But I shot one rooster, and I was like, I missed on one other rooster, and like two other roosters I pulled up, and there was like a one other rooster was a double, like it should have been a double, and I was just sitting there pulling the same trigger. So I switched back to the old trusty. Yours
what was that, Trevor?
Was a single trigger?
I got a single trigger on my side by side.
That custom order?
No, it's just a CZ. I just ordered it through my local gun store, and he asked me if I wanted the single trigger or the double trigger, and I said I'd rather go with the single trigger.
No, I have to go to Shields and ask him about that. I was like, because I kind of do like the side by side. Like, I think I can get used to that.
I definitely, there's something about shooting a side by side in the grouse woods, and I like it. I like how it fits me, and I definitely would pick the side by side over the over under any day of the week.
I do like my over under though.
It's hard to get used to going from an over under, but
right, I can see that. I just don't ever. I have my 12 gauge, and I brought it out a few times, and it's so goddamn heavy. And it's not even that heavy of a gun. It's still, I think it's 7 pounds, maybe like 6.8. But when you have a five and a half pound over under 20 gauge, and it's like, yeah, this thing gets the job done on pretty much anything I want it to. So,
yep, yeah,
I do have my, I do have my 410 side by side, but that doesn't get out very often.
No,
I shot a few grouse with my 410 this year. I really wanted to shoot a rooster with my 410. But I didn't have the confidence.
No.
Or finding shells that were like a good shell. It was always like finding like 8 or 9 shot 410. I was like, that is not going to, I don't really want to shoot 8 or 9 shot 410 at roosters.
Right. What shells do you normally shoot then?
What shells do I normally shoot? Shot boss. Shoot boss. I shot a lot of prairie storm this year.
Okay. So it's kind of a mixture, whatever you.
Yeah, I mean, I still had some boss from last year that I shot, and then I just kind of picked up some prairie storm. But now I see boss coming out with like a steel, so we'll see what that is.
Oh.
Huh. I got the email that they're coming out with like a supposed to be like a cheaper option.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, it's stateable.
What shells do you usually shoot, Trevor?
I shoot boss. Yep.
Okay.
Oh, do you always shoot boss or?
Yeah, with my 28, I've always shot boss. I shoot sevens in the grouse woods, and then if I shoot pheasants, I'll shoot fives. But my wife, she shoots boss sevens.
Yes, yeah, I picked up boss fives for last year in my 20 gauge for pheasant. I didn't use them. I had a bunch of Fiocchi, like golden pheasant 7.5s that I just shot for girls because I think I had 4 boxes because they were cheap when I bought a bunch.
Yep.
So I was like, I'm not going to buy any more shells until I use these ones at least. But yeah, on the boss's thing, it says his initial push to develop the shell's identity was to aim for the younger guy wanting to shoot boss but doesn't have the cash to spend on a $1.50 to $2 shell.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
So, yeah, so, like Steel Reserve, was an email, at least until the state of boss. So. Just saying there's going to be a powder shortage, but I know Tyler's talked about that on his podcast.
Yep.
Order or not. Yeah. So I'd like to try that. I know my buddy Joe, he shoots the War Chiefs, and he really likes those. So maybe I'll try it, but it's a hard time spending $40 on a box of shells. It's already expensive enough to go on them.
Not a cheap sport, that's for sure.
No, and then Prairie Storm ain't cheap either. It's $30 a box, so.
Yep.
So you just get the Winchester Super X's.
I can't even find Super X's.
That's the thing that I was with Boss. That's why I started shooting it, because that was the only one that I could actually find. You know, I ordered it, and it was the only one that actually had them in stock at the time, so I bought a whole bunch of them at once because I couldn't find Prairie Storms. I couldn't find nothing.
Great. I know a lot of people that live in that Prairie Storm too. That's a good shell. It's a good shell too.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, some people argue. I mean, yeah, the Super X. I know, but guys that shoot the Super X, so they're 20 gauge or 28 gauge too, that do just fine.
Yeah, I know a guy that does that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's me.
Yeah.
And they're not expensive. I tell you what. I'll stick with it until they prove me wrong. But I swear it's the shell I shoot the best with.
You still got this is coming from the guy that shot some TSS at pheasants.
Well, that was a while ago when I shot my 12 gauge. And I didn't have anything else.
You want to see a bird that was just hamburgered. wish we had video. On it, Michael, it's probably my besides Michael will be getting hit in the back by pheasants walking off of my pointing dogs. Twice or a couple times.
Yeah, I've sent him in.
I've sent him in. And he gets hit in the back by a hand that's been holding tight or something. But one of the best stories is we were out with our boss at the time. And we're walking this cattail slough, and Rooster gets up, and Michael starts yelling Rooster, and it's like, Rooster, bam! The bird was like, there wasn't anything left of the bird.
I basically Michael just made it fly faster.
Yeah. But yeah, you know what's so awesome? The bird accelerates full. But Michael was shooting. He couldn't find any steel. It was back in 2020, and he couldn't find any steel. So he got some, like, Federal TSS 3. Was it 3 and 9s?
Yeah, 3 and 9. It was the closest thing I could find.
$50 potentials.
Well, I was told that, well, even when scouting on Onyx ahead of time, that there was a lot of, like, waterfowl production areas.
There was.
That looked promising, so I was like, oh, I got to bring steel.
But we found a lot of unposted private, and we're like, well, this is a lot better.
Yeah.
Shoot, my phone's tight.
Well, that's all right. So next question we got here for you is, what would be your dream hunt to go on?
There's so many. I'd like to go to Arizona, but I don't know if it'd be technically a dream hunt. You know, Montana's up there, Western Montana I'd like to go to. I guess I don't even know if I have a dream hunt. There's just so many hunts, and there's so many new places and different.
All right, we'll make it easy. We'll make it easy on you then. What hunt do you want to do next year?
I'm going to Kansas for quail next year.
Oh, sweet.
Definitely going there next year.
I want to go too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, I was going to go this year, and then with weather and then us having our first kid, it just didn't work out. I didn't want to leave. Because I originally planned on going to Kansas in January. Well, then we were expecting in January, so that didn't work out. I was lucky enough I got to go in January, pheasant hunting in January. Wife was, I think she was 38 weeks pregnant. And I decided I was going about 3 hours from home, 4 hours from home. The weekend.
She allowed it?
Yep. Baby stayed in, so that was good. Trevor, what advice would you give someone looking to branch out into different species?
I'd have to say definitely do your scouting. Definitely talk to people, as many people as you can, before you pick a location on the map. Listen to podcasts. I mean, there's so many podcasts out there that, you know, you can learn little things they can pick up on. Talk to your, you know, the game wardens. I mean, definitely do as much scouting from home. Do some e-scouting on Onyx. I mean, do as much scouting as you possibly can before you drive. Say you drive 12, 24 hours away from home. You know, there's definitely something to doing it before you put boots on the ground, you know, because always you just burn yourself out. Because, you know, most people, they only have so many days to hunt. So it's really highly beneficial as much scouting as you possibly can. And
yeah,
you got to do it.
You see that quite a bit. People posting on like social, like Facebook forum pages, like, well, I'm out here and I'm not seeing any birds. And I was like, well, I don't know what you're doing out there because there ain't many birds. Like,
right. Yeah. And me and my wife, we do pretty much, well, we exclusively, it's all DIY. You know, for Idaho, we just talked to some people and, you know, did a lot of e-scouting and basically just threw a dart on the map, which we definitely went what our best option was. And we spent a lot of time planning it. We planned it, you know, 2 years out. So I had time to talk to so many people about, okay, like, what am I doing? So I don't get all the way out there 24 hours and put boots on the ground and there I'm shot. And I wasted 8 hours of my day hunting, you know, because when you get in that you're like that, you can burn yourself out really fast.
Right.
And I guess second piece of advice is I think you just need to do it. I mean, if it is however far away, just do it, because it's just a great experience to hunt different species instead of getting wrapped up in one species of bird. I mean, there's so many different birds that you can hunt that they're so different in every different way. You know, there's not a bird that's exactly the same, and it's just awesome to take in new experiences.
Right. Yeah, that's like the Sage Girl. So we were just kind of like, well, I'm doing it. So we went, and it was a long ass drive in a short amount of time. We literally drove it. We left on a Thursday and we were back on Sunday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing, you can only have 4 birds in your possession, 2 per day. It's only a 2-week season. So we drove, and my dad, it was funny because my dad said something about, he's like, well, hopefully, like, you have to work a little bit to get your birds. Hopefully you don't get out there and you go like 500 yards from the truck and you let me know. Well, that's right. Exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened on the first day. I got out there and we're like 500 yards from the truck and I already shot my 2. I was like, well, and we all kind of just took different ridges and circled all the way back to the truck. I was like, well, I'm done for the day. But there was a couple of the guys that still had like had one bird or no birds, so I just still ran dog with them. So it worked out. The next day, I was the last one to shoot my 2 birds, though. So
that's how it works, right?
Right. No, it was a sweet trip, but we still limited it out by like 10 o'clock. So we're like, well, we can't really hunt anymore here tomorrow. So should we try to like get to North Dakota tonight and hunt Sharpies? that was kind of our plan. We're like, let's hunt Sharpies till like noon and then head back home.
It was definitely a fast trip then.
Yeah, I was gracious enough there to like talk to some people, and one, a friend of mine, was gracious enough to give me a pin and to put us in like the right direction. And I kind of had that notion of where to go just by kind of talking to the DNR, but the pin definitely helped a little bit. Then we just kind of went different spots around that area and found different pieces. So
awesome.
Yeah,
definitely would like to do that someday. There's so much, there's so much country that I want to, there's so many different states that I want to experience, you know. It's hard to do all of them, you know, and I'm just kind of gonna start branching out to different states every year, try a new state and see what happens.
Yeah, that's kind of the boat I'm in. Like next year, probably try to take on Kansas or Nebraska for quail. Try something different.
Yep.
I do kind of like hunting sage grouse now. So I said I wouldn't go back to Wyoming, but now I've contemplated going back now the last few days after seeing a bunch of stuff on sage grouse on Instagram. Yeah. So I was like, yeah, dang, I could do it. Because the license is nothing. It's basically nothing to go hunt in Wyoming.
Oh, really?
You can either buy a $20 daily license or you pay $70 for the season, something like that, for an out-of-stater.
Oh, really? That's when we went to Idaho, it was neat, too, because you could do a three-day season, and then there's a three-day season, and then I can't remember if it was 10. I don't remember how many days the next one was, but it was nice because we planned on, you know, so if you only want to hunt 3 days, you can buy it, you know, and you can start it that day. Where in North Dakota, that's one thing that is kind of a little different, because on our way back through, I was like, oh, maybe I should, because I already had a tag. I bought the tag because I was out there in October, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to see if I can call and start my date, you know, for today. Well, I should have thought about that before I left, because you can't start your second part of your season the day of. You have to call 24 hours in advance.
Oh, really? You can't change it online?
No, you have to do it 24 hours in advance for your second season.
Let's see, that was the nice thing about Montana, too, because we went out there over Labor Day weekend, and for us to go to Montana, it's still a jaunt, but it's not like it's, you know, 12 hours. It's 6 from Grand Forks, but...
Right.
Yeah, they have a 3-day license too. You just can't hunt sage grouse and you can't hunt pheasants. Like, I mean, obviously we're hunting pheasants anyway, but you can't hunt pheasants on the opening weekend with the 3-day license or something like that. Just little rules like that. But yeah, the daily license is kind of a nice little deal. So we bought our few days of daily license, and then we're like, well, if we need to, let's go buy some more. Like, go get service and buy more.
Right. So, yeah, like, oh, I'm going to stay one more day, you can just buy one more day.
Right. Yeah, we looked into that, and I was like, holy crap, that's like, I mean, we're just paying for gas because we were camping, so gas and food.
Right. And there's something special about camping, too, you know.
Right. I was worried about grizzlies. Didn't sleep so great at night. And to find out that they don't, grizzlies weren't what you had to worry about there with black bears.
Are you talking Wyoming, or are you talking Montana now?
I'm talking Wyoming.
Oh, I thought you were still talking about Montana. I'm like, grizzlies?
No, I'd just be worried about coyotes then. But there was, you know, like 400 dogs on the campsite, so I don't think any coyote was sneaking in. Michael, you have anything else to add before we close up shop?
No, I don't think I do.
Trevor, do you have anything for us that you...
No, I guess I think we covered quite a bit.
We did.
That was really nice chatting with you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was nice talking to you too.
Anything else on the horizon besides Kansas Quail? 2024,
2025? For sure, North Dakota. I'd like to come out in September and hunt Sharpies. Definitely think I'm going to make that happen later in the end of September or something like that. I got to see, figure out everything. But definitely North Dakota and Kansas. I definitely am going to stick around home and, you know, I don't want to leave in October this year. I did that last year for North Dakota, and I regretted it because it was about, I missed the migration for woodcock. I was gone. So I'm going to stick around home in October. And it'd be a nice time to get out of the woods. The leaves are on the trees anyway in September, so it'd be nice to get out and go somewhere else.
Right. Well, if you're ever swinging through here.
Yeah, I'll definitely probably meet up and see if we can meet up. If I'm going, when I go through North Dakota this year, I'll figure out my dates and see if you guys want to chase some birds around.
Yeah. See how we can make that happen.
If you ever get a wild hair up your ass and come to Wisconsin, let me know.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Hunting in the woods, though, I don't get whacked in the face by anything hunting on the prairie.
No, you definitely don't. It's fun, though.
It's all fun. I mean, it's better than working, so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, grouse hunting can be a little frustrating at times, but when you do have a bird in hand, it's just something special.
I like to do it. Problem is my dogs have never done it, so it'd be like a whole new aspect of hunting.
That's a challenge to add to it, you know.
What's that?
That's another challenge that adds right into it.
Right. Right, yeah, the whole dog. It was different when I grew up like in some really good grouse country, because I grew up basically by Lake of the Woods.
Oh, okay.
I grew up hunting. That's what I grew up. My first upland birds that I shot were, I mean, we had them in their backyard, like literally underneath the evergreen trees. Yep. Walking, like, yep. They'd skirt around the grass on the edge of the evergreens and then back into the trees. You'd see them all the time. Never knew what they were until I shot my first one. And they're like, so.
Was it on the ground?
Yeah, it was in a tree with a pellet gun. So.
Yeah, my first one was on the ground.
It was really easy to get quite a few of them when I got my first 410. I got to take the 410.
Yeah.
And then my parents had 80 acres, and it was like CRP and like little like red willows, popples, and that, and trees. And I started branching out a little bit more than my parents, and we ended up moving to town. So, but yeah, I ended up shooting some birds just walking through back through. If I was doing it now, I'd probably be able to tell you what kind of trees they were, but I wasn't. Like popples, like a young popples. Does that sound right?
Yep, like an aspen stand or.
They're real thick, not super tall.
Nope, yep, that's probably that, yep.
Yeah, I remember shooting a few, like, that was my first one, so I shot out of the air. And I was like, that was sweet, but then they're really hard to find.
Yep.
When you have no dog.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, they blend in very well.
Yeah, I shot my first woodcock. I never knew what I was shooting. So now that I've got into upland, like talking to different people and seeing woodcock, I was like, well, that was what I shot when I was like 10.
Oh.
Yeah. One of those things where I was out grouse hunting. I was probably 12, whatever, somewhere in there. And I was like, oh, grouse hunting just in the backyard, or like back 40 property. And I was like, this one bird got up all weird out of this. And now when people talk about the flight, I was like, yeah, how they fly when they're flushed. And I was like, yeah, it kind of makes sense. Yep. But yeah.
That's pretty neat. Right before sundown. You know, as soon as the sun's down and it's starting to get a little dark, they'll actually fly around and they'll chirp. It's pretty neat.
Yeah.
They'll fly around the tops of the trees and they'll just be flying around, and it's actually pretty cool.
That's sweet.
Because at first, I didn't know what they were either. When I was, you know, 12 years old, I didn't know what the heck they were. I didn't know. Just knew it was some bird with a long beak.
Right. Right. Well, it's like a lot of people, they don't even know what half the birds are. They'll be going chase. Didn't even know that was a thing. That's like somebody's talking about how sage grouse after Yellowstone, the TV show.
Yep.
They had an episode about sage, like something affecting the sage grouse, and people all of a sudden were like, the amount of people that were like Googling what sage grouse were, and more money went into habitat after Yellowstone.
I believe that.
Yeah. Yeah. But I suppose we're 10 o'clock, almost 10:30 now. I suppose we shouldn't plug your socials here and
get some shut eye and go back to work tomorrow.
Yeah, Trevor, where can people find you on the socials?
Just my first and last name, Trevor, TrevorBeiger. This is my Instagram. I don't do a whole lot on Facebook, so pretty much my Instagram is what I keep up on.
Yeah, that's pretty much all. We don't post Facebook, so it's all right. But sweet. It was nice talking to you, Trevor, and hope to meet up with you possibly this fall.
All right. Sounds great. Thanks for the opportunity to come on and chat.
Yeah, it was good talking to you.